Now, as we come to the message tonight, just really excited, just God does stuff in our lives all the time. Is there one or two people that just want to share quickly what God's been doing for them lately? Just sort of 30 seconds. Just on the goodness of God, His favor, just testifying His goodness. It's always good to celebrate the goodness of God and His favor and love in our lives.
Around 2 seconds. Oh, dude, this is 2 hours. No, I'm kidding. I'm not going to see a message, I swear. So basically, yeah, like the past 2 months has just been crazy with work. I was working at Maya. Maya cut like a whole bunch of employees, so basically lost my job there. Still technically employed, but no hours. Moved to a skate shop. Their business is down. No hours there. Then got a call with Apple Computers, which was a job I'd been going for 7 months, took 5 interviews, and they finally said, hey, we got a job for you. Then last Sunday, they were just like, cool, we have to postpone that another 5 weeks, so it's now 7 weeks until I start. But even through all that and money problems and all that, God just keeps honing me to the point, just, what are you relying on? Are you relying on what the earthly things you've got, or are you using me as your source? Are you getting what you need from me? And it's just been like such a kind of humbling experience to just become completely dependent on God. And that's the thing, like, I'm not working as much, so I've just had the time to just be able to just dive into Him. And it's so just great when you actually just sit there and listen to what He has to say and just see, hey God, I'm in this whole kind of a thing, but You've placed me here. What is it You want me to do in this? And it's been really awesome to see that God's just been giving me all these things. And yeah, it's going to be awesome to see when come out and see at the end of the tunnel. But yeah, the road there is not that fun, but once you're there, it's going to be awesome. So yeah, that's just my little thing about God's doing.
Yeah, it's good. Cheers, man.
Had you this morning. Yeah, Scotty's right. Had me this morning. Same thing. Some of you guys have heard it, some haven't. Those that don't know, I had problems with kidney stones and had to have operation. A couple of miracles. One was that I got in for my op as quickly as I did. Had some prayer one Sunday night, and we were expecting a miracle that I'd turn up and they'd take an x-ray and say, hey, it's gone. Wonder why? And I was expecting this wonderful opportunity to tell them how good God was, and it didn't happen. So then I was having an operation. I thought, that's all right. It'll just be this op. They'll get the kidney stone out. It'll be done. And it didn't happen. Sort of after that, I got a bit cranky with God. I said, what's going on? You're missing all these chances for me to evangelize and tell people about you. And He spoke to me fairly hardly. It was, my ways are not your ways. And I sort of went, okay, cool. Well, what are we doing then? And the miracle is that I got in for my operations when I did. I didn't wait as long as most people are on public lists. Within a week, I was back in for the second op. Because they had cancellations. And in all of that, I had opportunities to not really share God with people, but touch base with some of the people at the hospital, patients, staff, and kept running into people that rode motorbikes and was able to invite them to God Squad's memorial run and find out where they work and where they hang out. So I've got opportunities now to go back and basically deepen those relationships and get to a point where, rather than being preached at, they're asking me to tell them. So God's pretty awesome, and He spoke to me and said, don't forget, all things work together for good, those that love the Lord and are called in His purpose. So if things aren't going right and you're going, God, what's going on? Why am I having to go through this? Remember, it doesn't say the good things. It says all things, and He will make something good out of it all. That's it.
I've been a bit uncertain about my future for a while now, and I guess I kind of struggled the concept of having to spend, I think it's 10 years studying after school for architecture. But anyway, 2 weeks ago, I found myself hating the job I'm in right now, which is KFC. But anyway, so one of my teachers come up to me and said, well, you want to go into architecture, right? And I said, yes. And he said, well, I know the director of Arcadium Designs on the Sunshine Coast. And I said, oh, okay. And he said, I'll give him a call and put in a good word for you and see what happens. And he said, oh, he's a Christian director of the firm. Like, he's a really nice guy and all that. So last week I got a call back saying they were discussing whether or not they'd have any positions. And yesterday I got another call saying that within a month I can be working at Arcadium Designs. Wow. So not only do I have a job at an architectural firm in grade 12, but that 10 years is going to actually go somewhere. So that was
awesome. 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 Yeah, yeah. Just love the goodness of God. Can I get a bit more on this, man? My voice isn't what it normally is. It's not there. Okay. Cool. A couple of weeks ago, I ended on talking about how Isaac got married and tried to pick it up last week. God had other ideas, so I'm picking it up this week. And so we're in Genesis 24, but rather than read the whole chapter again, I'll just quickly synopsis it. And so here's Abraham lying on his bed. He's just there and he's get this thought in his head, you know what? I've got to look after my son. And so he calls his servant over and goes, hey, mate, testify with me and promise me that you're going to go to our home country and get a wife for my son. Don't take him there, but make sure that a wife comes. And so they go through this thing. He goes back there and he says, okay, God, you've got to help me out here. What's going on? And so he prays, Lord, show me who this girl's going to be. Actually, make it. Let her draw water from the well. He goes to the well where everyone's coming, the time of day where everyone's coming to get water. Show me that this is her by letting her draw water from the well. And then if I ask her to give me some water, she'll give me some and then she'll water my camels. As she does that, as he prays that, straight away this girl, Rebecca, comes up, draws water from the well. He goes, hey, how you going? Can I have some water? Sure, here you go, have a drink. Let me water your camels as well. Feeds all the camels. That would have taken forever and ever and ever. Goes back, lets her family know, hey, I've been sent on a mission to grab her for my master's son to marry. And they're like, hey, this is a great idea. Obviously, you're rich. Cool. We want some money. And so that happens and all goes back. And he goes back and Isaac meets them as they're coming back. He's out praying. And then he meets them as they're coming near and goes, well, that's it. Goes running up, meets her that night, gets married in his mother's tent. And I think of that story and I go, man, if only it were that easy. If only it were that simple, and all the young single guys go, yeah, that would be really nice if it were just, that's it. I often used to think, man, it would be so good to have really godly parents who would be praying and just love me so much and just seeking God, and they just come to me one day, you know what, God's just got this girl for you to marry, here you go, we're going to arrange it and you're getting married tonight. And that would just be a nice, easy story, but it doesn't really happen that way. And so I mean, Friday I was talking about the whole sex thing. Tonight I want to really focus in on what God says to us out of this passage as in the stage of our lives, which is singles, but not just singles. I want to sort of call it sort of pre-marriage commitment. Because some people are in relationships, but they're really still single. And they're still acting single and they're behaving as if they're single and they're in a relationship but not really committed to the relationship. And so it really speaks to those parts of our lives as well. And so here we are, here's Isaac in a time and family's there and his mum's got IWGC syndrome. I want grandchildren syndrome. And she's there and man, oh, I've got to get a wife for my son, and nudges Abraham and go, hey, go get a wife. So Isaac's lonely. He's needing companionship. He's in need of a family. Really just like any young man or woman. Just, oh, man, I just want someone with me. And so he had options. He had a couple of options. What he could have done, instead of letting his dad send off his servant to find someone, he could have gone down to his local waterhole. And he's going, hey, let's see who's drawing water from the local waterhole tonight. Maybe Jenny's there with her 20 camels and she's just, oh, she's rich. Her dad's rich. That'd be a pretty good score. Or maybe Sally's there and, oh, she's really good looking. Maybe I'm good looking. We could have really good looking babies together. We can make really good kids. Or Myrtle, she's a really fun girl and I just could date her and just go and go, hey, Jenny, nice camels. Hey, what are you up to Saturday? How about we go feed our sheep together? and go, that's, what do you mean? She's got nice camels. But he doesn't do that. Now, often when we talk about relationships as Christians, we talk about sex and say, hey, don't do that till you get married. And we often tell a story of people crossing boundaries and then that there, and they broke up and are in such pain. And we say this, oh, you got to trust God. Oh, you got to pray more. Oh, you got to think on things above and not below. And really, we get to this point of dating with higher morals. And, you know, I think God's more interested, hey, Eleni, than in our relationships, than just our sex lives. I think he's more concerned with our relationships than just that one part of our lives, which we get to later. And so we seem to guard the groin and not the heart. And I really believe God's really into a heart. He's a heart dude. And so I don't see much wrong with dating per se, but what's the real heart behind it? What's the intention? Where's God going with this? See, let me ask this question. Who goes into a relationship believing that it's going to break up? We'll talk later. That's issues. You know, I know people that actually do this. They go in and it's like, I mean, but who really has that picture? Oh, we're going to get in the relationship. Yeah, we're going to go to the movies, and then we're going to go walking on the beach, and then we'll date for a while, and even we'll have dinner, and then we'll have the big, beautiful wedding, and it's going to be so nice. Oh, and then we're going to get divorced, and we're going to have a party and be single again so we can go through it all again. I'm just like, nobody really thinks like that. And yet, if you ask a bunch of young people, hey, are you going to get married? They're like, really? Nah, I'm too young for that. Don't talk to me about marriage. Oh, how come you're dating? Oh, because it feels good. I really like her. Oh, because he asked me? Nobody asked. Oh, because I'm lonely. And marriage doesn't seem to be the average reason why people pursue a relationship. Doesn't seem to be the highest thing on agenda. See, I don't get breakups. Breakups don't make sense. I've been through breakups. They hurt. They suck. And it just destroys our lives. Anyone that's been through them knows that. Like, how do you deal with that? Like, either people go and they start another relationship to try and hide it, or they internalize the pain, or they run away with it, or they just get angry or blame someone. I mean, I broke up with a girl when I was 19. It took me 2.5 years to process that. We weren't designed for it. We're not made for this rip apart, go join with someone else, destroy ourselves. And that's why Genesis 2:24, Matthew 19:5, Ephesians 5:31 mentioned, for this reason, a man will leave his mum and dad and be joined to his wife, and they become one flesh. No, dating is not mentioned in the Bible at all. No mention of it there. And so, Knight, I want to talk with this assumption. I want to talk with an assumption that we're here and we've made a decision for true love, right? So maybe we've done the ceremony or not, but we've got that decision in our lives. We've got it in our hearts. We've made a decision that we want God's best for our relationships. We're a people that trust God. If you're not, that's cool. I'm going to still believe this will speak to you and open your heart on it. But I really want to just speak how God would follow our romantic lives. See, when young people were surveyed, what is it that dictates how you relate, how you act in a relationship? 37% of them says, you know what? How our parents were, that's how we are. What our parents did, that's how we behave in a relationship. And they had all the other reasons. And 17% of people said, man, I've got no clue at all. We just don't know. And let me ask you this question. How did your parents date? How do they relate to each other? That is the number one role model that people give for how they act in a relationship. Maybe you're like me and your parents aren't actually together. What role model is that? How do you learn? What do we base our lives on? And how do we get this understanding? Maybe we need to look at how God dates. How does God set this up? And we've only had dating for 100 years, the way it is. 1920, it sort of started coming in when people got cars. Before that, what happened is a guy went calling. Anyone seen the movie The Patriot. Yeah, yeah. So here you got Heath Ledger in the movie, can't remember his character name, but he goes up and he asks this man, hey, can I write your daughter? Can I write to your daughter? I'm going off to war, can I write to your daughter? And he's like, what do you mean? Yeah, and mum comes up, of course you can. And they knew at that time the intention was, I'm writing to your daughter with the intention that I'm going to marry her. That was the whole reason behind it. So dating as we've had it is just this young thing in terms of history. And so I just want to touch on some of the dangers of it first up, and then look at what God does in this sphere. And number one reason, a danger of dating, different to how Isaac did it, is intimacy without commitment. All of a sudden in dating, what happens is you get intimate without commitment. Date to feel close, to feel good, connected. So I don't feel lonely anymore. And then all of a sudden, after that connection at first and that intimacy, you get to a point and go, you know, this doesn't feel the same as it started. Oh, you don't do it for me anymore. You don't make me feel as good as I used to. It's just like the icing. See, people want Olympic medals. I want an Olympic medal. I want a gold medal. That'd be fantastic. We watch them all on TV and it feels good and we dream of wanting the medal, but are we willing to put it on the commitment of training? Because that's what dating does. Dating just wants that outcome, that feel good, without putting it on the training and the commitment of a relationship. Number two, it skips the friendship. See, most dating happens straight away. You meet someone and go down. I come to church one night. Oh, I meet Gareth. Hi, oh, how you doing? I'm Scott. Hi, Gareth. Hey, yeah. Oh, and I get his number. That's cool. Tomorrow I call him. Hey, what are you doing? I'm not doing much. Hey, you want to go see a movie? Yeah, let's meet up. Yeah, come on. All of a sudden, we're dating the next day. And see, let's go to gym. Let's go to the guy I'm together. Yeah. And have you ever heard someone say, "Oh, I really like this person, but I don't know what it should do because I don't want to ruin our friendship. I don't want to lose our friendship." See, dating is a different set of rules to friendship. It's a different thing that goes on. And what happens in a dating relationship, all of a sudden it's like, you know what, I want to get to know you. I want to get to know me more. And so the focus becomes across on this. But when you're friends, it's like, oh man, you want to go to the gym? Yeah, let's go to the gym. And the focus is focusing together on the activity that you're doing. Friendship is side by side going a direction. But dating, you can skip that and miss out on the foundation of it. You know, good relationships are built on strong friendships. You know, the third reason is they can leave you stranded. I had a mate at school called Daniel. And he, when we were in grade 6, he got a girlfriend. And he used to sit with us all the time and play little trucks around roots of the trees and play footy and that. And then he got his girlfriend. Instead of sitting with us, he went and sat with her group. And pretty soon they stopped sitting with her group and they just sat by themselves. About 3 months later, they broke up and didn't sit together anymore. And for a few days, what he did, for about a week, he just sat by himself and he looked really down. And then he came back up to us and went, hey, can I sit with you guys again? We're like, yeah, sure, mate, come on. We were really good mates before that, but we never got that level of friendship back. You know, what often happens in young dating relationships is people isolate. They go off and they go, I'm just going to go so focused on this person and pull away from everybody else and everyone else they need. From family, from friends. And when they come back, they realize that they're all alone. Now, it's been said, unless a man is prepared to ask a woman to be his wife, what right has he to claim her exclusive attention? Unless she has been asked to marry him, why would a sensible woman promise any man her exclusive attention? Now, the fourth risk of dating is rose-colored glasses. You know, if when we try and get to know someone, it starts, you know, I'm going to get to know you, let's date, let's get to know. All of a sudden, you look at that person differently. They act differently. My best mate, not my best mate, one of my mates, he dated this girl back many years ago. And when he was dating her, they just started dating after they got to know each other. And I looked at this girl and go, man, there's something not right. There is issues here. There's issues in this relationship. And he was just head over heels for her. All things like her friends, they'd come and talk and go, man, we're worried about your mate. Because we know what this girl's like. We know what she talks about, how she acts around other guys. And all, he couldn't see because he was just straight in this relationship. And he got torn apart at the end. Anyone ever known someone like this? Seen them go through this? Yeah, we know it. It's there. It's a danger. See, people can impress. They dress to impress. We need to see the reality of who someone is. See them around other people. See them around their family. Get to know them first. The first, fifth thing is we practice divorce. You know, when we date, break up, you know, breakups, like I said before, hurt. Now, if you're like me and you're a little bit of a nuts person, I've got scars over my hands and elbows and legs and wounds, a few scars on my head and bits and pieces from where I've been skating and falling over, and one big triangle thing on my knee where I used my knee as a brake one day. Blood pouring out everywhere and lots of fun. But you know, when we hurt ourselves, when there's a wound, what happens? Scar tissue forms. Scars really don't have much feeling anymore, but they don't have any flexibility. They start to... Same thing with our heart. When our heart's broken, when there's a wound in our heart, often the way it heals back up is it forms a scar. It feels an emotional scar, this part of our heart that's dead. And if we keep doing that, all of a sudden we just get this calloused heart that doesn't allow ourselves to be exposed to someone and just builds up these walls. And so what can happen is when people just go in relationship, the ability to be able to give to someone and trust and believe in someone long term disintegrates. So all these things, all the things that I've just mentioned, the focus is, this is about me. This is all me. What's in this for me? How can I feel good when God's economy is backwards? It's upside down. It's, hey, how can I bless this other person? How can I bless someone? No commitment. You miss your friend. Miss friendship. You isolate. False impressions. Isaac had a servant sent to find him a wife. You know, this is huge importance to God. Massive importance. Because it was met with a testimony. This commitment of this servant was met with a testimony. You know, God, the first thing God ever did for anyone, I say this all the time, the first need God ever met in the human race was to provide a companion. First thing he ever did. Adam was lonely. Oh, going to provide a thing. And so Adam's there and he's like, man, God's going to, we're going to bring out all the animals that I've made. One of them can be your companion. And so they all come past and I'm sitting there going, yeah, I've got to get a companion. This is so cool. And a donkey comes past. They go, hey, donkey. And God, that stinks. I don't know. Not that one. And an elephant comes past. Oh, elephant, we could be really good friends. He can pick me up with his trunk. And I don't need a shower. He just breathes in his nose and blows it all over me for a shower. This is really, no, not an elephant. And, can you just imagine what it was like him standing there? Chihuahua, no, too small, God. Giraffe, too tall. Elephant, too big. Too spotty on the cheetahs. Too stripy on a zebra. And so he gets through every animal. That would have taken a while. Every animal. Imagine like whales, chipmunks, like mice, all random things. And so God makes a woman. Or as Adam put it, it's like, a whoa, man. And so God met this need. God met this need. In Matthew 6:33, God says, don't worry. Don't worry. I'll provide everything. See, Adam had something. He had vision. Adam knew what he needed. Even though it hadn't been created yet, even though Eve hadn't been created, woman hadn't been created, he knew what he needed. He had a vision for his life. He had a vision for his wife. What vision do you have? What vision is in you for your future relationship? I know girls, a lot of girls have vision for their future relationship. A lot of girls have vision for their wedding day. Yeah. Yeah, believe for their wedding day, and oh, the perfect dress, and oh, the nice church, and the music, and he's going to be wearing this, and all the bridesmaids will be wearing this, all 50 of them, all my best friends, all the bridesmaids, and oh, it's going to be so lovely. And that's where the vision ends. And for guys, that's usually at the end of that day, that's where the vision starts and ends about a week later when the honeymoon ends. That's what's your vision? What's in your heart? Are you still young? Are you still unhurt and still dreaming of Olympic gold? Or is there some callous and some hurt and wounds in your life that have deteriorated that vision? See, God's a God that sees things that are not as if they are. God's a God who's able to recognize things. He creates things out of nothing. See, he had a vision for Isaac, a beautiful woman from his own country, who was kind, generous, and trust God. See, before you were, he knew you. And God had a vision for your life. You know, as little kids, we dream of this stuff. Like, girls are always dreaming about Prince Charming and their knight in shining armor. You know, I believe that's a God-breathed dream. And yet we get out there and we look around and we look at what's on the menu and go, oh, hang on, Prince Charming's not there. Oh, no. We look around our friends at school. We get to school. We look around people and sometimes we even look around church and we go, oh, where is this guy? Where is this girl? What's going on? And God's the God of the unseen. He sees things that are not as if they are. But we've got to get eyes that see him. See, the Bible says that Jesus did nothing except that which he saw the Father doing. He caught hold of God's vision and enacted it. You know, sometimes we settle. Our vision dies. I'm not good enough. I don't deserve it, man. I've stuffed up. I've done all these other relationships. I can't have that. God has life in mind. His call is irrevocable. His gifts can't be taken away. The vision and the plan that he had for you and your relationship is still pure and wonderful no matter what's happened. And the first thing God, he doesn't want us to settle. He has vision. David, I've got a PowerPoint there. Can you just whack up? It's just one slide. I love this thing. To all the girls who are in a hurry to have a boyfriend or get married. Piece of biblical advice. Ruth patiently waited for her mate Boaz. Now, while you're waiting for your Boaz, don't settle for any of his relatives. Broke as, poor as, lying as, cheating as, dumb as, drunk as, cheap as, locked up as, good for nothing as, lazy as, and especially his third cousin, beaten on your as. Wait for your Boaz and make sure he respects your as. Don't know if I'd say that in church, but I think that's just brilliant. That is just brilliant. Ruth was just faithful. She just was there. She was just. And even when she met Boaz, Boaz said this. He was an old man. He said, you know what? All the people in our town, everyone in our town, in Ruth 3:8, everyone in our town knows that you are a woman of good character. You're a young, attractive woman, and you haven't gone out after all these other young men, but you've honored me. And they just had a wonderful relationship, which is spoken about through the Bible. You know, Jeremiah 29:11, I know the plans I have for you, plans for good. God doesn't want to give you a dodgy relationship. God doesn't want to give you a beaten up existence. He doesn't want to give you a heartbreak. He doesn't want to give you something that's going to destroy you emotionally and in life. He has good plans. Now, but sometimes we feel like we've missed it. Now, I just watched a lot of Olympics, so Olympics give good installations. Tom Silsby, what a bloke. 4 years ago, here's a man ranked number one in the world going, I'm believing for a gold medal. I'm going to go to the Olympics, win a gold medal. Last race, all he had to do was finish about seventh, and he capsizes and doesn't finish the race and miss out on a medal at Beijing. And so he sat there after it, and again, that interviews, he said, that's it, I quit, given up. I'm just going to quit the sport entirely. I've just devoted so many years to this, and this was my chance to quit. Had a change of heart. Came back. Ranked world number one. Came into these Olympics. All he had to do was not let this other guy finish five places ahead of him in the last race. And so he finished second last in the last race, kept this other guy to last, and got gold. You know, it doesn't matter how much you feel like you've failed. Can't get DQ'd. Can't get false started. God's call is irrevocable. This leads me to my second point. I didn't just do 2 points on this one. But at our wedding, at Susie and my wedding, like we had a lot of family there. Well, I had 2 members of my family, which pretty much is my whole family. And Susie had 50. And I was getting to know some of them. Sorry? No, not all yours were there. Yeah. Not all yours. Susie has this this cousin. And this cousin won't befriend her on Facebook. She's friends with all the rest of the family, but she won't talk to Susie on Facebook. And so she got invited to the wedding. Oh, no, I can't make it. And what was the actual fact was she was upset. How dare my younger cousin get married before me? This is not fair. It's just, and she's still angry. 6 years later, she's still upset that Susie got married first. How dare, I was meant to be married first. I was meant to get there. You know, we can get to that point in our lives. We're getting a bit older. We're getting into marriage age. We're getting into our early 20s and all our friends are starting to get engaged and we get these engagement invites and we get wedding invites and we get one and it's like, oh man, I had a crush on that girl. She can't be getting married. No, what if I'm meant to be? Oh, come on, and we can internalize this and get really upset and beat down on ourselves. You know, people start to get marriage on the brain. We start to get to this point and what happens? You get to that age, everyone starts to pair you off a bit. You turn up to a young adult event or a young adult camp and people are thinking, oh, these two, we'll try and get them two in the same group together hanging out all weekend. And people try and set you up because you get to this thing. And so what do you do, man? You're old enough, you want to marry, or maybe you're too young and you still want to marry. And what do you do at this point? All you want to do is be in that relationship. But you know, if you just go out and, what do you do? Second point. Number one, have a vision. Number two, live life now. Isaac and Beck. You know, I know many young people, they want to be in a relationship. And so they just go out and scratch the itch. They just go out and find someone. They're always on the hunt for a relationship. Go from girl to girl or guy to guy to guy to guy. And they just want to fulfill. They just want the satisfaction now. And when they're not, they're sitting there and they're going, oh, I'm dreaming about this guy. Oh, writing our names together and seeing if they add up to 100 when we add up all the letters and everything like that. And oh, it's just so great. And oh, one day, and practicing the signature. And wherever you go, you're on the lookout. You go to uni, you're checking out everyone there. You go to church and you're looking and you go, oh, maybe it's that person. I'll just get to know them. I'll sit with them at snack tonight and see what they're like. Oh, don't think it's them. And next week I'll sit with this person and say, you just, every time, youth alive, got to be there. There's 8,000 young people there. One of these people has to be the person God has for me. One of these people, it's got to be great. And Rebecca, she was off. She was single. What was she doing? She was watering camels. She was getting water for her family. Isaac, he was off spending time with God. Says he was meditating on God's word and what he was saying. He's doing his quiet time. You know, they weren't out looking for each other. They were fulfilling what God had in their hands to do at that moment. They were living life now, doing that stage. Ephesians 5:15 says this, be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. You know, when we're single, we've got a lot of questions. Who, when, where, why, how, what are they wearing? When are they going to rock up? How's this? But what can happen is we get so focused on this day when they walk into our lives and Cupid flies down with his little bow and arrow and organs start playing music all around us. And we have this divine moment and the voice of God goes, she's the one. And we have this whole thing there that so often we're focused forward and we miss what's going on right now. We have to work. We've got to look after our present responsibilities, developing good habits, getting rid of bad ones, building character. You know, this is every Christian's purpose, becoming mature like Christ. Now, a while ago, I had, after church on Sunday night, I finished packing up. I walk outside and there's two girls just sitting outside and they're mumbling about something. And so I stand there and listen for a bit and I just walk over and go, hey, oh, they're just mumbling and loud. They were near my car. I was going to my car. So I walk over and go, hey, what's up? No, what's up? Tell me what's up. Oh, there's no guys here. Oh, there's just no blokes around. I'm like, oh, really? Okay, well, tell me about the type of guy you're looking for then. I know there's some blokes. Tell me the type of guy. And so for the next 3 hours, we sit there and they make this list off to me, which was fantastic. They had vision. It was great. And so I asked them this question. Cool. I'm glad you got the vision of what guy you want to marry. That's fantastic. Now tell me, what's the type of girl that he's going to marry? No 3-hour conversation came up then. I'm like, tell me, what's the type of guy that he's going to marry? You said you wanted someone hardworking. What type of girl is he going to want? Oh, someone that's working, I guess. Okay, you said you want someone loving God. What type of girl is he going to want? Oh, someone that loves Jesus. How are they going to worship? Oh, if they're going to be worshiped. Where are they going to sit in church? Oh, you know, sitting down the back, just crossing your arms in worship, you're not going to get a guy that loves Jesus. And yeah. How about you move from the back to the front? And so they did. See, Gaz is looking. He's on the lookout, ladies. He's checking it out. And he's not on the prowl. He's just watching. And here's the thing, though. One of these young ladies, next week, she sat next to who's now her husband. She moved from the back row to the front row and sat next to her husband. They were dating a few weeks later, a couple of months later, probably a couple of months. They didn't really recognize what God was doing there, but they're married now. Actually, both of them are married to guys that are in this church now because they reposition themselves. Now, when you've got marriage on the brain, it can stop us developing who we are. So the real question is this: what makes a good husband? What makes a good wife? What are you doing about developing that? Marriage won't change you. Reflects who you are. Marriage is not a mold, it's a mirror. Marriage is not a mold, it's a mirror. You want to be a godly wife, you want to be a godly husband? Love, nurture, respect, protect, honor, communicate, practice. Let me say this, practice with your family. You know, you want to be a man that loves his wife? Cool, how do you treat your mum? How do you treat your sister? You know, the Bible says, In 1 Timothy, Paul's talking to Timothy. He's like, treat all God's women like your sisters. Want to be a godly wife? How do you treat your dad? When he asks you to do something, shut up, Dad. How do you treat him? You know, when Susan and I got married, I knew that she was going to be such a great wife because I saw how she treated her dad. I knew how she interacted with him, so I just knew it'd be easy. So practice with your family. Do we need to change? One of the most difficult things when you're married is actually seeking God together. Do you know how to seek God? Are you doing it on your own? Are you doing it with others? I'm not saying catch up with a lady guy. Don't pair off and do this, but grab a prayer partner, read the word together, practice doing it now in small groups, in our prayer meetings, our prayer times before church and Wednesdays. How do you look after your money? You know, when we're young, no responsibilities. Hey, so cool. We're just going to throw it everywhere. You know, when you're married, you've got to sort of budget. Mortgage, insurance, car, food. Electricity. Just keep repeating. How do you look after your money? You want to be ready for marriage? Be a good steward now. parenting. You want to be a good parent. What are you doing to build the parenting aspect of your lives? Help kids church, mops, hanging out, babysitting some of your leaders' kids. You know, Suze tells me of one instance where she like had one of those ah moments with me. They didn't happen very often, but there's one time it did. We were watching Origin next door, and you know, at halftime usually we throw a football around. So I got one of the young 13-year-olds that was there with us watching Origin, and he's trying to throw a ball, and he just could not throw a ball. It was just terrible. And so he sat there, and I taught him to pass a footy. And Suze looked at that and saw how I was treating kids, and went, oh. And it lit something up for her heart on what type of parent I might be about future. No, marriage isn't just the finish line. What are you doing to build who you are now? Live now. Live now. Live next point. I'm just going to end with a poem. It's called... Oh, I think I got lots of arsenal. It's called A Woman's Question. I don't know. Here we go. Some of it's sort of older language, but it's in the poetic thing. Do you know you have asked for the costliest thing ever made by the hand above? A woman's heart and a woman's life and a woman's wonderful love. Do you know you have asked for this priceless thing as a child might ask for a toy, demanding what others have died to win with a reckless dash of a boy? You have written my lesson out of duty out. Man-like, you have questioned me. Now stand at the bars of my woman's soul until I shall question thee. You require your mutton shall always be hot, your socks and shirts be whole. I require your heart be as true as God's stars and as pure as his heaven, your soul. You require a cook for your mutton and beef. I require a far greater thing. A seamstress you're waiting for socks and shirts. I look for a man and a king. A king for the beautiful realm called home, and a man that his maker God shall look upon and as he did the first and say, it is very good. I am fair and young, but the rose may fade from this soft young cheek one day. Will you love me then mid the fading leaves as you did among the blossoms of May? Is your heart and ocean so strong and true I may launch my all on its tide? A loving woman finds heaven or hell on the day she is made a bride. I require all things that are grand and true, all things that a man should be. If you give this all, I would stake my life to be all you demand of me. If you cannot be this, a laundress and cook, you can hire and little to pay. But a woman's heart and a woman's life are not one that way. Set your vision. Build who you are. Set strong. Father, where we are in life, Lord, help us be, whatever stage we're in, help us be thankful for the time. Lord, the days are evil. Let us live today with purpose. Father, help us to be where we are in life, whatever stage, whether it's single, whether it pursuing that covenant relationship, or whether it already in one. Father, let us honor you. Help our hearts to see that. And Lord, wherever we are, help us to be better wives, husbands, mums, dads. Build that into us now. You know, tonight, if you just want ministry for anything at all, maybe you need healing in your heart. Maybe you need healing in your body. Maybe you just want to get your eyes sort. Maybe you're like, you know what? My vision's a bit skewed. I just need to get my vision right. I need to get in my heart right what God's got for me. Now, if that's you and you want someone to pray with you, the altar's open tonight just as we stand and worship. Let someone just come and be with you and just believe with you in that, because God just wants us. He's just calling us his.
Thank you.